Welcome to The Faithful Servant, a podcast reaching you in the midst of your battles, where you can find hope, joy, wisdom, and healing. My name is Eric Howland, and at the end of the day, my hope is that I can hear the words, "Well done, my faithful servant." So welcome to this week's episode of The Faithful Servant podcast. Going to welcome a guest into the show today, but before I do, I want to dive into Proverbs 27:17. Iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. And when I think of this person that I'm bringing on, I think of a mentor. And I've talked in the past about the importance of having a mentor in your life. If it's in the business world, if it's in your personal level, your spiritual level, the importance of having someone in your life that has gone through life's experiences is there to help you and to guide you with wisdom, empathy, just a deep care for you to want to see you be better. And so I'm going to welcome Mitch Elliott to the show.
Thank you, Eric.
And Mitch and I have known each other, gosh, probably almost 3 years now.
Yep.
And I met Mitch through Relevant Church. And how we came connected is I joined Relevant. I got immersed right away into like the heart of serving. And one of the things that I've always loved to do is pray. And Mitch and his wife, Kim, lead the prayer team. And I approached them at their kind of, I don't know what you call it, bonanza or whatever.
Career fair
for the Relevant Church. But and I just approached them. And we just had a great bond from yep. the very start. So Mitch, welcome.
Thank you.
We'll go into your story, but when you think of a mentor, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Someone that's been further down the highway than where I'm at, that has a different life perspective. Someone that maybe has been through one or two more battles than I've been through, and it's somebody that I can learn from. Not to be preached from, but to really learn from. The other thing I think of a mentor is someone that listens. Listens more. You know, we've got two ears and one mouth, so we should be listening twice as much as a mentor.
So what got you, I guess, to the place where you are now? I guess give me a little background of your story and lead us to where you are, because I mean you're not only a leader on the prayer team, but you're an elder of the church.
Yes.
And so to give people out there kind of an understanding of what does it take to become that, because when I think of an elder, I think of
much
someone
much older than me, right?
Yeah. Moses. When I think of an elder, I think of someone who has life experiences mm-hmm. that, but they always stayed rooted in their faith.
Mm-hmm.
So give me your story.
Well, I was a farm kid raised in central Nebraska. Grew up in the church. It was a Lutheran church, had that background, but never had a personal relationship with Christ. And post-college, graduated University of Nebraska, Lincoln, moved to Omaha, started my first job as an architect. And some friends of ours invited us to church. And through that, I became aware of a totally different dimension in terms of a personal relationship with Jesus. And at the age of 23, my wife and I both accepted Christ. It was an evangelism explosion team that visited our home after we had visited church. And they laid out the gospel so crystal clear, I was shocked. And I was not confident that I would spend eternity with God. Now, interestingly, at that age, I like to say I probably took out fire insurance. I didn't want to go to hell. So I accepted him as my savior. But this whole lordship thing, that was progressive. As a young, probably overly confident architect and young man, I got this. I had everything under control, at least in my mind. And so it probably took another 10 years before I fully surrendered my way to his way. And it was pretty progressive. And my wife, Kim, was way ahead of me spiritually in those years. She probably still is. You don't have to answer that, but
that's a question for later,
another time. But yeah. We were in a church for 16 years, serving in all kinds of areas, music ministry, small groups, some prayer, tied in with young marrieds, really investing in peer couples our age. But there was a pastor that took me under his wing and served as that mentor role like you were talking about.
So going back to kind of what you said about the gospel was presented to you in a way that was crystal clear, that made sense. I think the communication of the gospel gets very blurry. And one of the things I truly love about Relevant, and having gone to Relevant here now 3.5 years, is, you know, this whole aspect of truth and grace. Mm-hmm. And that's the gospel at its core, is the truth of it is there's one way. But this aspect of grace is often forgotten.
Right.
So how was that presented to you back then, a few years ago, to make it so personable and crystal clear that you just gave up?
And I probably meant or missed the faith aspect of the gospel. I went through confirmation as a 12-year-old. Like I said, grew up in the Lutheran church. But when they said that there's nothing that I could do to earn the love of God, there's nothing that I could do to be saved except him, that it's not by works, it was just by faith. It was so crystal clear, because I'd been striving, and I'm a striver. I'm type A personality, working hard, want to be liked by people, you know, all those things. But when they just laid it out that all you have to do is surrender, it was like, why have I been trying so hard? And so that was just, that jumped out at me, and it really was impactful for me.
And, you know, you bring up an interesting point, the type A personality. We're kind of perfectionists, like, you know, and we're always striving to, I want to be careful with my words, but in my own life is this almost, I've got to be perfect to come to God.
I've got to be better.
Yes. I've got to keep, before I can be healed, I've got to turn and clean up my act, and then that will go.
Right, right.
And God says, come as you are.
Come as you are.
So when you think of what you just said, and you tie it to the faith, what it means to be a faithful servant, give me a little understanding from your perspective.
I think you asked me that before in preparation in terms of a faithful servant. And something that jumps out at me, because I've been saved now for 41 years. I've been following Christ, and which sounds like a really long time. It's been awesome. But there have been so many, what I would call, should I stay or should I go moments in my life. And this relates to career, work, church, ministry. Fortunately, it never was marriage in terms of should I stay or should I go. But there are all kinds of pivotal moments in our life where I've had to grapple with that question. And I think from a faithful servant standpoint, fortunately, most of the time, I sought God's will in that question. There were a few times I decided on my own, and it kind of paid for that in terms of, you know, the repercussions of that. But it was, it was just those have been opportunities that have really crystallized how I can be that faithful servant. So, as an example, Eric, this mentor that I had early on in my walk, probably I was convinced that the highest calling that I could follow as a follower of Christ was full-time ministry. And I was grappling. I decided at 10 years old I wanted to be an architect. And now at 28, 30, as I've been exposed to more ministry opportunities, it's like, maybe, God, am I supposed to go into full-time ministry? And fortunately, a pastor named Ed Silvoso from Argentina and another mentor, John Reed, spoke into my life and introduced me to what they called marketplace ministry and reinforced the fact that I am in full-time ministry as an architect or as a businessman or, you know, fill in the blank, as an owner of Country Tire, you know, that we are in full-time ministry. And that was so freeing that I didn't have to say, should I stay or should I go in a career? God wanted me to do both. And but if I hadn't had those mentors in my life, speaking into my life, and for me to listen and not to stiff arm them and say, I got this, I may not have been the faithful servant that I think I'm experiencing through that.
And so I went into ministry right after college.
Okay.
I went into youth ministry. That's where I felt God called me, is to be able to pour into youth. After 3 years and dealing with the circumstances of depression, all that, I had to exit. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't lead people if you yourself aren't healthy. I was angry at God. Mm-hmm. Should I stay or should I go? I didn't want to go. I didn't want to be taken out of something that I was called to, because how would I have an impact on God's kingdom if I'm not in that? And God took that away from me. And I literally was angry at God. Didn't have a mentor at the time to pour into me and to give me understanding until much later.
And that's a prime example of sometimes we have to lose something to gain something.
And it was about 8 months after. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of still angry, but I went to God, and God's response to me was, your ministry is here. It's not necessarily having to deal with, you know, work with kids or be in a church environment. Your ministry is where I put you.
You bloom where you're planted.
Yes. So that question, should I stay or should I go? How do you know the difference? How do you know how God is leading you to stay or go?
The Lord has impressed upon me every time I've had one of these tension-filled options. The question that rings in my ear every time is, Mitch, are you running away from something or are you running towards something? And it was a litmus test question for me, because if I was running away, that was more about me rather than God's will. But if I was being led toward something, I was running toward something, that was that litmus test that this feels good, this is right. The other piece is, and it comes down to comfort, I think that for so many of us, we're driven by wanting to be comfortable. And if a person doesn't like change, status quo is comfortable. You know what's expected, it's structured. But there are times when I've been asked to step into a zone that I'm really uncomfortable with. And a lot of times, and as I trust, if I go, okay, God, you got this, I don't, it pans out well.
You got an example of that?
I had a situation once where, I'm trying to think of which is the best way to share it. Okay. So, and this comes down to another question. This is, should I say something or be still and know that he is God? So it relates a little bit to the, should I stay or should I go? Should I say something or not? And harmony is very low on my talent. So I tend to be a bit of a bull in a china closet. I'll speak first, think later. And so I have to rely on the Lord when he says, shh. Years ago in the architecture firm that I was at, we had an opportunity to design a new building for Planned Parenthood. And, you know, the leadership in our firm, mostly Catholic individuals, but we were very secular in terms of an architectural firm, as you might expect. And I'm leading the marketing effort, and who's who within the community is on this board. And in our world, it's about relationships and who you know, not what you know, many times. And I was grappling and struggling with, there is no peace in my spirit to be designing for this organization. And so I brought it up to our leadership. And we had the most amazing conversation and they said, I'm so glad you brought this up because I've been struggling with this too, but I wasn't going to say anything because this could be a huge commission. And so that was the aha moment for me to say, if you're really struggling like that, say something. It could have gone the other way. They could have said, let's not get political, just put your head down and design. And I would have had to make another decision, but fortunately I didn't have to. But that was one of those, do I say something or do I be still?
So, and it was in that uncomfortableness.
Yep.
That led you to, so if you felt you were just like, you know, comfortable, status quo, we're going to just kind of live life, continue living life because I like the paycheck. I like my lifestyle. I don't want to upset the apple cart.
Yep.
So taking a step out in faith. Do you find it hard or difficult would be, an easier one when it comes to those tough topics that we deal with? And, you know, like you and I attend the same church. We're going through the same sermon series, listening intently on these very tough topics. And you brought up Planned Parenthood, so I'm going to just go right into that.
Sure.
Is you have your stance. Does a faithful servant run away from the people that he might disagree with?
Absolutely not. Jesus didn't. Here's an example. We have a DEI committee at our work, and I absolutely want to embrace the idea of diverse perspectives and understanding how someone grew up and maybe the life impact that they had that was different than me growing up in Central Nebraska on a farm. And knowing that all these different perspectives, especially when we come into designing environments for people, can make for such a rich experience, a collaborative experience. So I'm embracing this DEI committee, so to speak, but I want to do it without compromising who I am as a follower of Christ. And there are some aspects of that realm that create friction inside me. And so I work really hard at articulating a faithful servant heart to the Lord Jesus without being judgmental. And as you said, living in both truth and grace, which I can't do on my own. It's impossible to do on my own.
Well, I mean, you get the picture going back of here's this lady who's about ready to get stoned, right?
Right.
And all of the Pharisees, and for those people, it's the Jewish leaders at the time, they're standing around her, and Jesus shows up, and they basically call out Jesus, condemn her. For she's sinned so great that she should be stoned.
They were ready to, they had all the sticks and stones in their hands. They were ready to stone her.
And Jesus gets down in the sand and draws a picture and just says to them,
"You without sin, cast the first stone." And they all walked away.
Has there been a time in your life where you've picked up a stone and wanted to throw it?
Oh, yeah. And it goes back to the scripture, you know, before you remove the speck in your brother's eye, remove the log out of your own. Very similar in terms of the teaching from Jesus. But there have been times that someone acts or says something that really I disagree with, maybe even from a scriptural standpoint. And I've had to check myself because, again, I tend to speak first, think later. And, you know, my awesome wife is a great balance for me to I either get the look or the, you know, she's just, after 43 years of marriage, she knows how to say, might want to hold off on this one. And so she's been a great partner and companion for me. But yeah, of really realizing, you know, okay, is this judgment in my heart?
And that's, I want to have you answer this question so people out there can, because it's one thing to just say, okay, I hear what he's saying, but I need help. Like when I'm in the midst of my anger towards someone, what do I need to do to be able to get my mind off of the anger? To be able to put it, you know, because I don't want to be angry, but this person has got me to the point of just like, I want to stone them, right?
Right.
In your mind, what does a faithful servant do in those times? Because I don't think we're void from anger or any emotion.
Jesus just said, don't sin in your anger.
It's exactly, it's the act after our anger. So what does a faithful servant do in those moments?
Okay, I have empathy high in my
mine's
talents.
34, I think.
Nice, okay.
Yeah, it's low.
That's why we work well together.
Yeah.
I think one of the key questions that we have to ask is why. So if a, and I've had this where I've been meeting with a man that he's abusing his wife. And as a proponent of marriage, the anger wells up in me to think about a man beating his wife. And I'm sitting on a couch across from this guy, and he's confessing to me. And that first emotion, especially us as warriors, you just want to plow him.
I'm going to beat you up like you beat your wife up.
Exactly.
Right?
You're going to reap what you've sown.
Right.
But the compassion of Jesus in me is like, what's going on? Why do you feel this way? Why are you taking the anger out? And almost always, there's something in their past. There's something that they're dealing with that triggers. You know, it could have been that his wife had a trigger word that his mother used when he was growing up. I mean, there's all kinds of examples. So I think really understand, why does this person respond the way that they do? Why do they dive into pornography? Why, you know, what is driving this kind of prideful, selfish action or behavior? Understanding why. There tends to be something in their life, in their background, that's impacting that. And so I think as a faithful servant, to ask why first and not judge, really understand what they're going through. Doesn't mean that justifies the action, but it sure helps to maybe explain it a little bit and have a deeper understanding.
Before we wrap up, I want to give you just a few minutes to share anything you want to share to any one person out there right now that might be tuning in, listening in, that just needs a word. Because I mean, Mitch, one of the things that I've truly, truly enjoyed about our relationship is we meet for coffee, and some, you know, we have our intention to go through a book. But you and I's relationship, we get right into it. We get right into the weeds of how I'm doing sometimes and what I'm struggling with. And I oftentimes leave being uplifted. So if there's anything that you want to share real quick to anyone out there that just needs to hear a word.
I think as it goes back to your very first question about a mentor, I think especially for us guys, we need to find a safe place where we can be us, where we can be real, where I can be transparent without judgment, where somebody will continue to ask questions. Well, why do you feel that way? How does that impact you? You know, one of the best things that I've experienced with either an individual guy or a group of guys is it's a really deep, deep question. How are you doing? And they mean it. They want to know. And they expect me to be real. Remove the facade, quit playing hide and seek, and be real. Now, you may have to go through a few relationships before you find one that's safe and it's judgment-free zone, and that you can say, okay, I'm not trying to impress you, but here's the real me, and it's struggling. And, you know, I don't put that on my wife. I mean, Kim and I have a great relationship, but she shouldn't be the one to hold me accountable. She shouldn't be the one where if she's the only place that's safe for me, that can be really hard on a relationship and on her. Because as a woman, she's not wired like a man is. And so to have, and I Kim appreciates it that I have guys that I can just sit down with and go, I'm struggling.
Do you have like three guidelines that you would tell people what to look for in a mentor? Because like you just brought up a great point, and I am not going to choose someone of the opposite sex to be a mentor.
Right.
I cannot do that. There's no understanding.
And when you're transparent and vulnerable, there's an emotional connection that can step into the danger zone of having that opposite sex mentoring relationship. I'm not saying don't be friends with the opposite sex. No, not at all. But I think first and foremost, a good listener and someone that asks more questions, look at their question to statement ratio. And if it's really high, I think that's positive, because they're seeking, you know, Covey talks about seek first to understand before being understood. And so asking those open-ended questions that invite people to talk, that invite people to be transparent. I think that would be the first one. The second one is that mutual transparency. That you know that I'm not the one just bleeding out here and you're just sitting there in judgment, but that we share mutually to a level that is deeper and a spiritual level that I think glorifies God and helps each other. And that, you know me, I have a goofy sense of humor. I think laughter and fun has to be a part of any mentoring relationship.
Yeah, because then it's, just, relief valve. Then it's just therapy at that point, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Mitch, thank you. Not only for coming on, but to open up your wings and kind of let me come in to your life and to your family's life too. You know, and the role you've had in me to, you know, I think when you first met me to today, I've been able to mature in my anger, how I respond to people, how I live life now is more calming than what I used to be. And one of the biggest things that we've talked about over our time is the idea of sonship.
Yep.
And whose son am I? And following after God, I'm not abandoned by God.
That's right.
And I led a life so many years being abandoned by God, it felt like, but I have never been. And it was, you know, your guidance, your mentorship that led me to a place where I'm comfortable knowing who my father is.
What I watched over the years, Eric, is you've embraced the father heart of God. Because it's way too easy for us to put God in a box and to assume that he's going to respond like our earthly fathers. And for some of us, we had great relationships with our fathers. Others, we haven't. But it's easy to frame that relationship with God in what you know. And his unconditional love as a heavenly father. But we have to embrace that.
Yeah.
If you stiff arm it, and we've done it. I've watched you do it. You've watched me do it. Yep. It happens.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Eric.
So everyone out there, I want to challenge you first and foremost, before I wrap this up, find yourself someone that has experienced life that can walk with you. And make sure when you're finding that person, they're not dragging you. They're walking with you. It will help you if it's professional, personal, or spiritually Having someone in your life will only help you grow as a person, because we do not know everything. And so that's the importance of having someone go with us. I want to close with this, though, is going back to this idea, should I stay or should I go? And finding yourself in the uncomfortable moments. And I would challenge everyone out there is, you know, if you're struggling with something right now in your life and you don't know if you should stay or you should go, if it's a relationship, if it's your career, it doesn't matter what it is. Dive into yourself internally and really see, am I running away from something or am I running towards something? Like Mitch said, and I think that is the great advice in this episode, is what are you running? Are you running towards something? Are you running away from it? Let yourselves run towards God. At the end of the day, when you choose to make that choice to run towards God, you have freedom, you have peace, you have joy, because you live a life where you now know that God is in control of that. And when you find yourself in those uncomfortable moments, know this. It's God. It's God leading you. And when you go down that path, and at the end of the day, you will see the fruit that God has for you, and you will hear the words, "Well done, my faithful servant."